Go ahead. Ms. King? Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Quorum?
Okay, the time is 8:30. We have one agenda item today, and that is the approval of the terms of audit engagement letter with the Wisconsin Legislative Audit Bureau. Jerry, did you want to speak to this?
Yes, I will speak to it, and Patrick, jump in, please, whenever you would like to. Both the charter ordinance, which is 3615, and the ANO audit charter provide that the Board of Trustees will engage the auditors, provide for auditor engagement, and the role of the ANO really is to make a recommendation to the full board. Under 3615, the board is charged with administering the system and all of its aspects, including record keeping, investment management, preparation of financial statements, and of course, part of that is engaging the auditors for the financial audit. So that's why we convened the committee today, so that the committee could consider approving the engagement. Act 12, Wisconsin Act 12 from 2023 provides that the financial audit for both the ERS and for the county pension plan will be performed by the Legislative Audit Bureau. So in that respect, it is mandated by law, or mandated by Act 12. But there is more to the state pension law than just Act 12. There's Chapter 36, there's the 37 Act, the 47 Act, there's a Supreme Court case, that decision that gives the board the authority to administer the plan, and also Act 12 itself by its terms under Section 242 provides that the Annuity and Pension Board will continue to administer the plan. So it's clear after talking to Patrick that there needs to be some governance authority that engages the auditors. So that's what this is about. In your packet, you have a draft letter from the legislative, it's not a draft, it's a letter they sent to us, Legislative Audit Bureau for engagement of the auditors, and they're asking the three officers, the chief financial officer, the chief investment officer, and the executive director to sign this letter and to acknowledge several things, and most of those are mentioned on page 4 for ERS responsibilities. We took exception to bullet number 5 on page 4, that basically they're asking us to acknowledge that the ERS staff is responsible for the determining the reasonableness of the significant assumptions used in making accounting estimates. We asked them to make some clarification of this. There are accounting assumptions that are made, or assumptions that are made in connection with the accounts. Some of them are actuarial in nature, and clearly, in our view, the charter reserves those to the Board of Trustees and not to the staff. As we asked them to clarify that the assumptions they're talking about, that they're asking us to acknowledge that we determine the reasonableness of them, that they're not the actuarial assumptions. They said that they would modify this and send us a revised letter, but they have not done so. So given that we want to get on with the audit, we have some language that we are suggesting that we're going to annotate this document with the language. Terry, you have it available. It's also in my letter, my response dated February 7th back to the state auditor. In the last paragraph, we explain that really the determining of the actuarial assumptions is reserved to the Board of Trustees and not the staff. And the thing about this is that this is, Patrick, jump in anytime now. This audit engagement letter is in fact part of our financials. It's a sworn statement, so we're pretty careful about signing sworn statements. We want to make sure that everything is factually correct, and we don't want to be put in a position where we're going to be signing something under oath, essentially, that is factually incorrect, and nothing good can come out of that. So We've asked them to modify it again, and having seen no revision, we're suggesting this language here, which I believe is factually correct, that determining the actuarial assumptions anyway is reserved to the board. Now, there are some other assumptions, accounting assumptions that are made for routine things that are probably not material in our situation. For example, we have receivables, and you know, you don't always get 100% of receivables. We have a pretty good track record in that regard, but in financial statements, we have to make some assumption as to what percentage of the receivables we'll actually get. Some fail, theoretically. So those are the kind of assumptions that our accounting team makes. But we don't make the actuarial assumptions. Is Daniel on the line?
Yeah.
Dan, would you like, we had some discussions with this, with our other accounting advisors. Dan, would you like to enumerate a few of these other type assumptions that are made for financial statement purposes? This is a pretty arcane issue. Are you there, Dan?
Yes, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Yep, and as Jerry mentioned, yeah, for the most part, there would be like any receivables that we have, certain accruals that we make as part of our year end in relation to maybe some, you know, payables and things like that. Very, you know, routine annual accruals, their estimates, for the most part. And we do some estimates on our investments, but those are based upon what the managers give us.
Yeah. So we're going to propose to retain the bullet, but then footnote it with this, with the language on the screen, so that it's clear that we're not making the actuarial assumptions. So I guess we're asking, a motion would be in order to engage the auditors, the Legislative Audit Bureau, and also,
go ahead. Oh no, I was gonna have a question about this. I guess this is probably more for Patrick as the attorney.
Okay.
So when we make a revision like this, Patrick, or we add this language, and then if Dan and Jerry sign it, does that make it valid? Do you know what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, I don't want to say part of the frustration, but there's no two signatures on this document. This is not the LAB signs it and the ERS signs it.
Right.
It's really just a, if you read the language on the very last page, Terry, I don't know if you can go all the way down there. What it really is an acknowledgement.
Right.
We are acknowledging the terms of the engagement, including the responsibilities of ERS management. So
we're agreeing to them.
Right.
It's kind of a combination of, like, because we signed a management letter, too, at the end of the financials, saying that, you know, we do this, we're responsible for this. So this is kind of the combination of the two.
Oh, yes,
right.
That's correct. And I just want to chime in here a little bit, Patrick. The difference here, Aisha, is that in the prior audits, there was an agreement with the outside audit firm that the board had authorized. There's no agreement
right.
in place here. There's a state statute, however. and there's, again, as I mentioned, the pension laws are in the state are fairly complex and somewhat ambiguous. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, and so it's not a contract as you would traditionally
right.
assume, since there's no two parties placing a signature on it, but the ERS officers are being asked to acknowledge the terms and representation stated in the letter, and that's why we spoke with the LAB and said, hey, most of this is fine, we just have this one bullet point that we would like a correction on. And it's my understanding that they I wasn't on the call, but it's my understanding that they agreed to make a change. We just didn't receive their proposed change by the time of this meeting. So instead of guessing what they would, you know, do, we propose that we would just include our own language and submit it. You know, of course, if they come back and provide some sort of clarification that is reasonably close to what we have, I certainly think both the committee and the board could approve the execution of this document, just with the caveat that that provision be corrected. So giving the officers the latitude to either use our own correction or whichever correction that LAB proposes. And so to answer your question directly, you know, is it valid? It's really up to the LAB with, it's their letter. I mean, they created this, what they want to accept. And we're, based on their prior representations, we're optimistic that they will make the required changes or accept the required changes. However, if they refuse to accept a modified letter, then we're at a bit of an impasse because ERS can't sign a factually incorrect acknowledgement, and we can't force the LAB to accept it. So I don't think we're there, honestly. I think this is, I would describe the communications back and forth as a good faith, I guess, conversation, trying to understand the basis for why we're requesting the changes. I think the LAB understands the ERS's concerns. And again, while we don't have their language, I think that based on the prior conversations, that hopefully it would be, it would achieve the same effect as the language we're proposing. So that was long and rambling, but I guess what I'm trying to say to roll it up is that the committee can approve the engagement letter just with the understanding that that bullet point be corrected to reflect the actual governance responsibilities of the system.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
I don't know if I'm just missing something, and I hate to derail all the, seems to be all the work that you've already done, but I don't know if, help me, Patrick, I'm on a different plane, I guess, here, is that why are we even entertaining signing something like this with the wording? There's other, I know Jerry highlighted a few concerning points, but I've got a couple more concerning points in there. Not that we have anything to hide or anything, or we're not going to cooperate, because I know staff is going to 100% professionally cooperate with the audit. But as I understand it, one of the aspects of Act 12 was that the audit bureau, the state audit bureau, audit us and the county. Well, that's fine, and that's on them. That doesn't mandate us into all of this stuff that seems to start, because you know, sometimes these things start to grow their own tentacles and the people involved start to add things. Like, one of the things that concerns me here is that you're telling us to do all this stuff, but there's no citations to any law that says, you know, you have to do this based on, you know, 8864.12, like you see in most legal. There's just this reference, this amorphous Act 12, and you need to, you ERS need to do all these things. I would be much more comfortable with signing something not called an engagement, which is what we do with people we hire. It'd be more of like a memorandum of understanding that we're going to, what you said, Patrick, in good faith, what you said this conversation has been going, in good faith, we're going to help you in any way you need to perform your audits. And if you come up with any recommendations along the way, we're more than willing to listen to them, and we like to always accept best practice recommendations or whatnot. But at the end of the day, we as a board that are responsible to govern this fund, and we're the fiduciaries solely for the fund and its members, we're going to make those decisions at the end of the day based on that standard, not that somebody from Madison is telling us to do this, because you know it is our fund, and why are we signing up for all this? I just don't see anything in Act 12 that puts these shackles on us. This is just telling the audit bureau to audit us, and they can present that audit back to their principals, and like I said, give us any recommendations along the way. But it sounds a lot like there's some terms in here being dictated, and I don't know what the basis of that is.
But yeah, and it, so if you, I think I can address most of those concerns. If you look at Act 12, what Act 12 did in relation to the Legislative Audit Bureau was essentially empower it, or really require it, to do two things. One is an annual financial audit of the ERS, and that's in, these are both in Wisconsin statutes 13.941. And then the second thing that they did is require the LAB to contract for an actuarial audit every 5 years. So the letter that's been placed before the board, I believe is, and if you read chapter 13, the sections that relate to the Legislative Audit Bureau, they basically say that it's that they are governed by industry standards, that in everything they do, they're required to comply with, you know, generally accepted auditing standards. I forget the phrase that they use, but it's pretty similar to that. And so I believe that this engagement letter is really, it is a standard practice, and that's why they are going through it. You know, even though this has been required by statute, we're still proceeding. It is still an audit, and so we're going through the normal industry standard procedures of an engagement letter. And I think this is just the LAB's version of that. So, and that's true on the flip side too. That's why when, you know, even though this is an audit required by statute, I have, in my discussions with Jerry, have said, well, we still have governance of the ERS. We're still required to, as you said, Mr. Klusman, exercise decision-making to the extent that the board has it under the existing law. And that's why this is being submitted to the A&O committee. That's why this is being submitted to the board, because, you know, those, nothing in Act 12 did away with those governance controls. It really just created a state mandated auditor. And so, you know, I think both the LAB and the ERS are trying to proceed through the normal course of commencing an audit, you know, even though we're in this somewhat unusual circumstance of it being mandated by statute. So I don't know if that addressed all your concerns, but I think that's what this letter is. This letter is really just an attempt to, or I mean, it is not an attempt. It is an effort to comply with standard industry practice.
To make you feel better, we do engagement letters with our external auditors like every year. So
okay, good.
It's standard practice.
Yep, good.
They're
okay.
Probably just lengthier because it is like the first time and yada yada, everything else they have to go through.
I think, yeah, I mean, that's a good point too. This is new for the LAB as well. So this yeah. isn't just uncharted territory for us. You know, they audit the WRS, but that's a long-standing requirement and relationship that they have. So this is still, you know, that's why I said I think we're in the good faith process here of just sort of buffing out any rough spots in this letter, because, you know, this is just as new for them as it is for us. So I think that's a really good point.
I would like to add something to that too. The LAB people, the audit director, did explain to us that this is in fact relying on their audit professional standards. Our point to them was that the audit profession cannot change the governance requirements of the ERS, and that's why we brought this to the committee, as Patrick noted. Also, we had some concern about the factual correctness of the statement about the assumptions. They didn't distinguish actuarial assumptions from the other assumptions. So we're, again, operating in good faith here, trying to, you know, proceed with this audit, but also make sure that what we sign is factually correct. The other thing that is different about this audit is that Act 12 prescribes that both the county fund and the city fund will pay for the audit. There's no contract in place here specifying a do not to exceed. And so they explained to us that they would be sending us a billing letter. We will be bringing that back to the A&O and to the board to assess its reasonableness, because again, as fiduciaries, the board is still required to determine the reasonableness of any services that they pay for. Act 12 does not absolve, in my opinion, the board from the law of trust in the state, nor does it absolve the board from following Internal Revenue Code provisions that specify that expenditures for services from qualified plans are only based on reasonable levels, which basically the benchmark for reasonableness is usually the going rate in the marketplace. So we will be bringing back the billing letters when they come in. We haven't seen them yet. We don't really know what the costs are going to be. They haven't explained any of that to us, but So we are sort of feeling our way through this process as we go.
Good. I think that answers everything I had, any concerns I had. The only, my only remaining issue is that I don't see a timeliness mandate here, so I'm not comfortable with the letter and the form it's in, and like you said, that there's no, they're going to send us a correction. I think they know that anything signed is going to need to go through the board. Our board meetings are public record. They're posted when they are. And if they didn't supply it today, and I mean, we call this special meeting, we can always call another special meeting, but I'm not really excited to approve it in its current form until we see, I want to see something final that you all approve of and is a final product. But that's just my point.
Okay. Well, Mr. Klusman, we all we're planning to do is put a footnote with this language that you see on the screen, if you can see that on your laptop. We're going to retain the bullet point number 5 on page 4 and simply asterisk it and say that we're trying to clarify that the assumptions do not include actuarial assumptions. That's all we're trying to do. And if we sign this and send it and they don't accept it, then we'll have to have further discussions. But we're hoping that for the sake of expeditious completion of the audit, that once we sign this, that it'll be accepted and we'll just continue on so they can get on with the field work.
So then are you going to delete the highlighted concern areas and replace them with this, or?
Well, the highlighted areas were just, those were mostly for my own purposes, but I wanted to send them to you as well. Again, all we're gonna do is put an asterisk after bullet number 5 and that's it right there. We're just gonna put an asterisk right there. And then at the bottom of the page, put the language that you just saw. So it's a footnote. We're just going to footnote that to clarify that actuarial assumptions are not, that staff is not responsible for making actuarial assumptions.
Why would we just tell them to take that bullet point out? Because otherwise you're going to leave that bullet point in that says you're deciding the reasonableness of the assumption.
You can't really take it out, Tom, because there are other accounting estimates that are, like, we sign off on this similar statement every year as well, like from the city side, because there are a lot of other assumptions from an accounting point of view that you do. What's the word I'm looking for? Someone help me out with the word. Not verify, but...
Well, there are other assumptions that are, in our case, not material, but they're still...
That you kind of vouch for that are
right,
reasonable,
right.
Like, as the management of the financials, that's the word I was looking for. Okay. That's why you can't delete the bullet point.
Okay, so you're just going to leave that bullet point in and then just carve out the actuarial assumption piece.
Correct. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
Jerry, all the other highlighted things you have in here are just to kind of make it stand out, right?
That's correct.
It wasn't, they were concerns. Okay. I'm comfortable with adding a footnote and an asterisk to add those like two short paragraphs there. Molly, did you have any questions or concerns? Or Tom, sorry, did you have any more?
I agree with you now, so I changed my tune to agree with what you just said.
Molly, did you have any questions or concerns?
No, I don't have any. I think I was on the same page with Mr. Klusman there for a quick second until you mentioned that. So yeah, I think that the recommendation by Mr. Allen and team is to add this as a footnote. I'm completely in agreement. I know we do have Deborah Ford on here. I'm curious to know what her take is. She's done a lot of negotiation and things in her past, and curious to see what her if she has anything to find on this. That she needs.
To be perfectly honest, I was sort of on the same page as Mr. Klusman. To clarify, I'm sort of okay based on her clarification of why we couldn't take the sentence out. So,
okay, so then it sounds like we're all in agreement then. Does someone have a motion then to approve the engagement letter?
Right, as
added modification.
Yeah, right, as modified. Thank you.
Klusman motion as modified.
Thank you.
Ms. King, I'll second that.
Thank you. Then hearing no objections, the motion passes. And that being our only agenda item, I think we just need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
Tom will second.
Okay, and then we are adjourned as of 8:55. See everyone in 5 minutes. Is this the same?
Yeah.